Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on an often overlooked area of operating a successful collection agency. From time to time, every agency has to deal with a complaint, be it from a client or a consumer. How agencies not only respond to those complaints, but make the necessary changes to keep those complaints from ever being made again is an important strategy that many companies fail to implement. We're fortunate to have a trio of great speakers who will share their experiences and insights to help turn the lemons of complaints into lemonade. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. Allow me to introduce Christopher Rickman to say a few words about the company and its service. Christopher?
Thank you, Mike, and hello, everyone. I am grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. My company provides a knowledge link, a web-based employee education and compliance training application to companies in the collection industry. KnowledgeLink is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees. Our clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high level of assurance their staff members have mastered and are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge expected of them when interacting with consumers. KnowledgeLink automatically builds documentation of the compliance training efforts of the company for existing and prospective clients and for regulators. For those of you I don't know or haven't met, I spent most of my career on your side of the desk. I worked in the collection industry for more than 30 years, most of that time in executive management of a collection firm. KnowledgeLink was created to address many of the shortcomings in training and compliance I saw as COO and CEO of my firm. I use KnowledgeLink to implement an ongoing continuous training cycle, reinforcing the knowledge you expect staff members to have before it begins to fade from memory, to present collection, client, or company policies to your staff members during onboarding training, or at ongoing recurring schedules where they acknowledge they have read and understand these policies, present tests during training events to validate learning, and on recurring schedules to certify staff in areas you wish, such as the FDCPA or HIPAA. Use KnowledgeLink during training events to present videos or slideshows followed by a set of questions to validate participation in learning. In summary, KnowledgeLink will close knowledge gaps, promote accountability, lower the cost of training, document for prospective and existing clients, regulators, or auditors your company's proactive role in preventing compliance nonconformities. To find out more, visit us at peakrevenuelearning.com. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks, Christopher. For those of you who aren't familiar with our webinar format, there isn't anything necessarily wrong with your screen. My webinars are audio only, so this webinar is being recorded, and a recording will be made available to anybody after the event is concluded. Let me take a minute just to say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AR.net is the industry's largest network of professionals in the collections and debt buying industries. For nearly a decade, the site has sought to deliver the highest quality news and information via a networking platform that allows members to communicate and interact with one another in ways they're not able to do anywhere else. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Jana Meyer is the Director of Quality and Compliance at Receivables Performance Management, a collection agency based in Lynnwood, Washington. In her role, Jana is responsible for the firm's compliance management system and making sure that the agency staff are following the rules and requirements prescribed by the law and the firm's clients. She was previously a loan loss specialist at BECU, a credit union with more than $12 billion of assets. Mary Shores is the president and CEO of Midstate Collection Solutions, a collection agency based in Champaign, Illinois. She's been the CEO of the agency for nearly two decades, and that experience has made her a sought-after speaker and author. Her book, Conscious Communications, is due to be published later this year. The book aims to help people harness the power of words to change their minds, their choices, and their lives. Harry Strausser is the corporate vanguard at Eastern Revenue, a collection agency based in Wayne, Pennsylvania. He was previously the owner and president of Remit Corp, a collection agency also based in Pennsylvania. He's been a certified instructor with ACA International for nearly three decades and is one of the foremost experts on training a collection agency staff and operating a successful business in the arm industry. I want to offer my sincerest gratitude and appreciation to Jana, Mary, and Harry for sharing their insights today, and to Christopher and Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by me. We encourage you to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your webinar control panel. And with that, let's begin today's discussion. Jana, we'll start with you first. On the topic of complaints from clients, can you give us a little sense or a little bit of background as to how your agency handles complaints from dissatisfied customers?
So we have an actual department. We refer to it as our escalations department. And both verbal and written complaints go through that department. They're trained to basically de-escalate any situation. They're not commissioned employees. They're not collectors. They're trained to talk with the consumer or respond to a consumer and out exactly what their issue is, if it's a collector, if it's our clients, and then respond to them appropriately, whether it be to, you know, provide them a letter that they're requesting or see if we can get exceptions made on accounts. But they're, anytime those complaints come in, that department is specially trained to handle them. And then we track those in our compliance management system so that we can monitor both clients, you know, if a particular client's causing us complaints or a particular agent is causing us complaints, and try to manage to those situations, whether it be a tough conversation with a client or the fact that it's time to let an agent go because they're causing too many complaints. Pardon me, I'm fighting a cold right now.
No, that's completely fine. Is the process any different for handling complaints from dissatisfied clients?
It's not. Most of the time, those, if they come in from a client, those will come into an executive most of the time, whether it be me or through Howard. And if it's actually a client, we'll, you know, if the consumer's complained to the client and then the client is contacting us, well, the client usually will tell us, hey, I need you to respond to the consumer and then let us know how you handled it. So I'll usually get involved in those to oversee them to make sure that they're handled properly, and then either myself or my boss will handle the correspondence back to the client.
What about you, Mary? Can you talk a little bit about how your agency handles complaints from your clients?
Yes. So, and I'm going to start this off with a story, if that's okay, Mike.
Sure, go ahead.
So years ago, my parents owned a collection agency that they opened that in 1986. It was called Interstate Credit and Collections. And when I opened my agency in 98, I was able to take over a lot of the clients that my parents had. So it was nice because I had a book of business that had some long-term relationships established. And even after years of that, I had a client that was a very large client. And what happened was they would send reports via email, and they had been sending this sort of like payment report that had payment and adjustments on it for several years. And they started using the part of Excel that had different tabs on it. And at this time, this was probably about 10 or 12 years ago, at the time when we were getting in the reports, we didn't notice that the Excel sheet had separate tabs on it. So we were never accessing the information on the tabs other than the main worksheet. Long story short, so after this client had a 20-year relationship with either my company or my parents' company, just on that one mistake, they canceled services with us. And I think that the important lesson there is that you can spend years building rapport with a client, and it can take one instance to completely derail that relationship. So what we do in our office, we have a client relations department, and anything that comes in is going to first go to the client relations department. We use the system Words That Work that I created on both consumers and clients. So just because we use that system means we actually rarely get any complaints. But what I see is that we'll get questions that are maybe a complaint in disguise. So a question, someone asking a question can even be an indication that if you do a root cause analysis, you may be able to find out that what they're asking about isn't really what is the intention of what they're asking about, if you know what I mean. So once a communication of some sort would come into the client relations department, we're going to open a trouble ticket, which is a documented system, sort of like what Jana said. That so we're going to track that and make sure and get back with them right away. And then there are times that that can become a training opportunity, as you said.
I know, Harry, you're relatively new at Eastern, but I'm sure in your experience, you're back at Remit, you've got some insights you can share as to what you did in terms of how your agency handled complaints from dissatisfied customers.
Sure. And as we discussed earlier, Mike, my transition in selling my company was only 30 days ago. So I've been in the trenches literally since my family started the agency back in the early 70s. And I would have to agree with much of what Mary said in that this is a relationship business. We have, in many cases, very long relationships with our clients. And just anecdotally, when I just sold my agency, I had started a company about 25 years ago, spinning off of my family's company. I have clients that I've had for 25 years that we are close friends. You give them a hug and a kiss when you see them type of thing. But those people that you have the relationships with sometimes aren't always the decision makers. So they may be high level, but they may have someone that they report to. And positions change, people change. We lose business today because of, and many of you listening today may have had a very long-term relationship with a client, and because it's a medical facility and it merged with a big conglomerate, and they've already got their vendors in place. So I think it's relationship-oriented, but I do agree in today's world, it could just take one mistake, one time to lose a client. I think the key is being responsive. I've always found that if, myself as an owner, my business partner, Dwayne Heisler as an owner, we were always very engaged in our company. And when there is an issue with a client, if they can get it escalated to an owner right on the phone with them saying, what can I do to help? That has helped us tremendously over the years. We've also found education is key, and I think getting a little bit back to what Mary was saying, I think the onboarding process of clients is very important relative to the future satisfaction with your service. I like to be realistic. New clients, I'm going to tell them what their expected liquidation rates are, what the industry rates are. The odds are stacked heavily against us, so don't expect the moon. When realistically, we're lucky to get a few percentage points of liquidation. So I would say overall education, effective communication, and building relationships to the point that you're extremely responsive.
That's an interesting point you bring up about, trying not necessarily to head off complaints at the pass, but, sort of managing, setting expectations and managing them right from the start. Is that something that you've always done, or is that, Harry, is that a process that you sort of refined over time?
We've always done it. I would say we've refined it over time for sure. I always referred to our approach with clients as having a consultative approach. So we're there not only to collect their bad debt. We're there to help them understand the rules and the regulations and the statistics of the industry, and you'd have a more of a comprehensive relationship rather than just be the vendor that collects their bad debt. And I think that helps reduce a lot of the dissatisfaction.
Mary, can you talk about a little bit about that? Is that a process or a strategy that you engage in at your firm in terms of sort of managing expectations right from the start of the relationship?
Yes, I think it's very important. I used to have a salesperson who had this tagline that I hated. It was horrible. He would say, we can collect what you can't. And I didn't like that tagline because I think it sets up an expectation that we're going to collect this money, right?
Right.
Well, so the thing is, we're debt collectors and we're supposed to collect the money. And so I think that educating the clients on what your processes, procedures are, as well as educating them on expectations. So we like to even get down to the specifics, like especially with a new client, you know, you'll need to place placements consistently for 9 months before you will start to see consistent returns. You know, discussing with them exactly what to expect about the legal process, if they're open to that, how all that works, how court costs works, how reimbursements work. I'm definitely into the education piece of it, especially when it comes to credit reporting. I'm very passionate about credit reporting, and I want to make sure that our clients understand the ins and outs of that as well. Just one more thing I wanted to add on the first question is, like, just to say the specifics of how the complaint would be handled is that first we would write it up on a trouble ticket, which is our tracking system. Then we would do a root cause analysis, which would be simply like peeling back at least 5 layers of the question to make sure we understand exactly what's going on. And then from there, you know, it could be any kind of solution depending on what type of complaint it is. Like, for example, we had something come in last week, it wasn't really a complaint so much as a question, but a person was wondering why an attorney accepted a payment arrangement of $100 a month because the client felt like she could get that much on her own. You know, so a lot of that, the way we handled that was education based, you know, point out here are the benefits now that this payment arrangement is in the court system versus, you know, a payment arrangement that you offered to the consumer, but the consumer never technically sent you a payment. So things like that, making sure they understand the longevity of the account, those kinds of things.
Well, what's interesting about what you said, Mary, I've got like a little story on the opposite end. Sometimes we are too effective too quickly.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes I distinctly remember one client. It was a lithotripsy procedure placed, $9,800 balances that they placed. We collected the balance in full in 5 days. She placed it on our portal. We got our collectors right on it, initiated, you know, the validation letter immediately, and the gentleman had just gotten an insurance payment, and we got the payment immediately, but he decided to go in and pay direct. And she called to close the account, but, you know, obviously we hadn't worked it yet. And, you know, we had a long conversation about that. And finally, we were victorious in our plea with her. But we kind of joked, you know, would you have felt better if it took us 2 years to collect it at $100 a week? Or are you happy that we collected it quickly? So
it's a very good point that you make. And we have at least one client where we actually don't charge them any commission in the first however many days an account is
placed.
Because when I asked them, you know, what's your number one concern with working collection agencies, the answer was, you know, we just hate it when a payment was crossed in the mail and you know, that perception of you guys got paid but you didn't do any work. So what it shows you is they don't understand the value of that, say, opening an account process, because from their perspective, nothing was done. They don't understand our skip tracing procedures. You know, and so there may be some validity to that kind of concern from a client. You know, if I were in their shoes, I would certainly feel the same way, so I can understand why they would question that. At the same time, you know, I understand from our perspective how we need to protect our book of accounts, and we can't just give away commission on direct payments. On the other hand, I think it's good to like open a conversation or create a conversation about how you can structure your rates for clients who would have that particular concern.
Sure, sure. And then that gets back to the relationship issue. This particular client, we had a very long relationship with, and there's a lot of goodwill there. And
that's wonderful.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us find that, you know, it's if you've got that goodwill and you've got that good relationship and the understanding, it's a little easier to work through some of these challenges.
So one way in that type of, one way to turn that type of complaint into a training opportunity or into just an opportunity in general is to, you know, open up those discussions to get them to understand, well, here's how we, here's what we do as soon as we get your account. Here's the processes that are involved to prepare it before we even send out that first letter, or as well as opening up a conversation to say, hey, would you want to, you know, change your rate structure or look at renegotiating your rate structure? And the beauty of that is that a lot of times you can get a higher commission on the back on, you know, as the account ages.
Yeah, that's a great point. And with that, this particular issue, we're talking about it collecting quickly because of the technologies we leverage today. You know, mm-hmm. the client portals that we have, years ago, they used to, you know, put the paperwork and the billing statements in the mail to us. Somebody had to hand key them in. Today, they put the data on our computer. Tomorrow morning, the letter's going out. We've got people on the phone. So it's a very different world relative to the, you know, the life cycle of an account and how quickly we start working.
Let me just interrupt for one quick second. I just wanted to let everybody know that unfortunately Jana had an emergency at work and had to jump off the webinar. So if she's able to get back before the end, she promised to call back in. But in the meantime, we'll just rely on the obvious expertise of Harry and Mary, who are doing a great job. But let me just move along the discussion a little bit. Are there certain types of customers that you can kind of tell are more likely to, well, let me take one step back first. We're talking about complaints, and the subject of the webinar is complaints, but it seems to me that you're making a distinction between maybe questions and complaints. So let me ask you first, and Harry, I'll start with you. Is there a difference between a question and a complaint, and maybe what would you define as sort of a complaint?
Yeah, I think there is a difference between a question and a complaint. And I think that, as we've kind of already outlined a little bit, you know, we have gotten very few client complaints per se over the years, because I think like with Mary's scenario, you know, we take great pains of bringing a client aboard. We form the relationship. We appoint a liaison and client service to them. So you know, they're educated. They understand. So, you know, a complaint, a more common complaint we might get would be a client that calls, not necessarily complaining that we've done something wrong, but expressing that perhaps a consumer has complained to them. And so what will happen is they'll say, I got a call from Mary Jones. She just talked with one of your collectors. She's all upset. She claims that your collector was belligerent and terrible with her. You know, and then, of course, we take that scenario very much like Mary indicated in working through a set of steps to better understand what happened. We do record our calls. We are always very happy to provide a client with a copy of the recording, often listen to the recording with them. And so you can turn, you know, what sounds like a complaint into what's really just an expressing of a concern of something that happened. A different type of complaint might be, for instance, they got their billing statement and there was sales tax added to an item that they shouldn't have had added. Maybe it's a new client, and then the setup, somehow they were listed as taxable versus non-taxable, and then you get it corrected. I think that there is a difference. I think those of us that have worked very hard over the years to form the relationships find that it's more inquiries about how things work and why they work that way than the fact that we're doing something wrong. The type of clients I typically find is we tend not to get very many complaints or negative feedback from the larger clients, the more sophisticated clients. We typically find it's the smaller mom and pop place. Just they're not their business acumen isn't what some of the others are. They want every dime collected because darn it, they did the work. They never want to close accounts. They think that 8 years from now, that person might pay. They want it on your system. So we find that to be a case sometimes too.
Is that true with you too, Mary? Let's start with first how you would sort of differentiate between I guess a question, a complaint, you know, an inquiry, and then what types of companies you're seeing those come from?
So I'll start with the type of company. I agree with Harry. It's typically the smaller companies that don't have a lot of sophistication in understanding the collections process as a process that is mandated and regulated by law. So they might have this sort of Bookum Dano kind of perception about what we're doing. And so that can be, for example, some of our real estate clients that might only have a few properties. And for the most part, if a client's going to hassle us too much on that kind of thing because they're really being demanding about wanting a services that aren't really appropriate to what we do, then we would end up just canceling those accounts. I honestly just don't remember the last time that we got an actual complaint. So I tend to look, if I get a question, you know, I want to see, could there be an underlying dissatisfaction, I'll call it. So like, for example, if somebody is saying to me, they have a question about why can't this person pay my office versus the attorney's office, well, I could flip that around to say this person is really dissatisfied with this service and that's why she wants to take control back. So I'm going to say yes, there's a difference because there's obviously if someone's complaining, they're calling and saying something like, we're not happy with that thing you did, versus a question, you know, has a different thing. But we would handle each situation the same way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The first thing that's really important is that no matter what, you always want to validate what your clients are saying. So regardless whether it's a client or a consumer, you want to validate what they've said. So in our process, we have a three-step process, which is step one, validate. Step two, plant seeds of happiness. Step three, always say an action statement. And so what I find is that we don't take enough time to validate what a person is saying. So that's just as simple as saying, you know, I can certainly see why that is important to you. And then, you know, moving on to words such as, we are more than happy to help find a solution for this. What we can do is, you know, X, Y, Z.
As a small town collection firm, you know, we're located in Northeast Pennsylvania. We have always opened our doors to very small operators. You know, our marketing goals have us going after the bigger players, but certainly anybody that walks in the door, and you know, we actually about a month before we transferred my company, we had an older gentleman that came in at a rental property, and they buzzed up to me, you know, would you want to take this one account he has? And I just knew what I was getting myself into. I said, absolutely. So come on up, sir. An hour and 15 minutes later on this one account, looking at pictures of damage to the rental unit and all these other things, I had to kind of laugh to myself because it's a reminder. I mean, this one account was the only rental account he ever had that quote unquote stiffed him. And by darn, he had to collect that money. He was almost in tears at one point.
Because they, you know, so when there's an emotional, what I call that is when there's an emotional attachment to the debt, Harry.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you're talking about. And I actually, so I had a client once that called me. He had sold his business. He owned a sleep clinic. He called me one day out of the blue. He had sold this business like 5 years before. So he called me and he said, you're never going to believe what happened. And I'm like, you know, what? And he said, well, that guy that owes me $45 delivered pizza to my house last night. And he was just up in arms because the guy who delivered his pizza didn't seem to recognize him.
Oh, no.
And so, you know, what I had to take the time to explain to him was like, listen, Mr. Sleep Doctor, you know, you have an emotional attachment to this debt here that I guarantee you that guy had no idea who you were, and he's not thinking about that $45. But I want you to think about the power that $45 has had over you all these years and what that triggered for you, you know. So I do spend a lot of time just like explaining to them that they've got to let go of that emotional attachment. It's not something that's healthy for them. And understand that, you know, the truth is that it's on that person's credit report. You know, it has made an effect on their lives, even on, you know, the lowest level of you know, the guy's a pizza delivery guy. What do you want?
Well, besides, if your client was a sleep doctor, he probably was doing a good job. That's why the guy didn't remember him. He was asleep the whole time, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what sleep doctors actually do, but okay.
Or maybe it's because he can sleep. I don't know.
That's an interesting point, Mary. The that's a very frank conversation that you have to have with a client, you know, getting them to sort of understand that point. How do you approach that conversation with them so that you're doing it in an understanding and empathetic way?
So, I'm pretty matter of fact. That's just my personality. And I think that, my personality type is a DISC, so that's a dominant influencer is what that means. I have like a really high D and a really high I, so I just have this gift of being able to say things and people just accept them. So for me, it comes very naturally, but I have to, you know, I have other staff that don't exactly have that high DI, so I train them through scripting of how to handle this. And again, it goes all back to always validating. You know, I can certainly understand that this shook you up, that this, you know, pizza delivery guy owes you $45. And, you know, I should have been like, well, how much tip did you give him? But anyway, I just explain a little bit that about what it means to have an emotional attachment to a debt. And so we see that in those smaller clients, like Harry was saying, but my larger clients, they really don't. One of the things that when I'm going to be working with a medium-sized client, it's a doctor's office. We have a lot of orthopedic clients, and the doctors actually own the clinic collectively. But what I find is that when I'm setting up services, I really prefer it that the doctors don't get a list of who's going to collection. You know what I'm talking about, Harry, when they'll like go through and pick and choose, well, I don't want to send this person to collections.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I want to send this person to collections, right? And yeah. So, you know, that's another thing is like, if I were in that doctor's shoes, this patient that's sitting on my table, I don't want to know that they have an account in collections because I don't want that to affect my cognitive ability to treat them. That's not what should be on my mind. And so, you know, one of the things that I'm, you know, known for in this industry right now is teaching that there is a psychological burden to debt. And I think that that's one of the things in our industry as a whole that we don't talk a lot about. Okay. So there's a psychological burden when you have a debt, but there's also a psychological burden to being a creditor. And so if any of us, you know, have ever had money personally owed to us, we know what that feels like, you know. So Harry, if I owed you $500 and I avoid you like the plague, then that's causing a psychological burden within you. And that is where that emotional attachment is coming from.
Sure.
And so I just like to really acknowledge it, you know, say, okay, this is what it is. And then to explain that, you know, I understand this because I actually own several rental properties, and my very first unit that I bought in 2004, I was really proud, right? And I proceeded to rent to a meth head who put holes in every single wall, let a bunch of cats live there and multiply like rabbits. And when I got my unit back 6 months later, I had to do a whole remodel job. And so you tend to take that very personally. Like instead of looking at it as a debt, you look at it as this person did this to me.
Yes. And, yeah, it becomes quite emotional.
Right. And so what I do is just, you know, talk to them about how collections is really about the totality of the collection. You know, it's the totality of the collections, not just this one account or that one account, but the totality of what we're doing and the understanding of this is what the process is. This is what your expectations should be. Is that what you're looking for, Mike?
Yeah. Let me ask a different question. We've kind of been hinting at it a little bit, but it seems like all the things we've been talking about so far are inbound, I'll call them complaints or questions. But do you have a mechanism, and Harry, I'll start with you, do you have a mechanism for going up to soliciting feedback and asking for comments or insights, be they positive or negative?
Yes, we did. We use a client portal called Client Access Web through a company called Applied Innovation, and we would shoot out periodic surveys to our clients asking about their satisfaction with our program. Likewise, all of our clients in client service had a particular partner or liaison in our company that got to know the client quite well. So they're the ones that we're communicating all the time. And then occasional visits, particularly to your clients that are in that, you know, upper half echelon of client size, where we would just come out and ask the question, anything that we could do differently or better for you. So I think it's important to do that. I think we presume sometimes no news is good news. If we haven't heard anything from the client, they've got to be happy. And I think, you know, companies have found that that is not an accurate assessment, because sometimes they've got issues and they're just not proactive enough or assertive enough to reach out to you, and you can lose clients pretty readily that way.
Mary, let me ask you one question, and then we'll close the book on customers and moving more toward consumers. Any of the situations we've talked about, inquiries, questions, complaints, do they all necessarily get to be training opportunities? Are they things that you turn around afterwards and make changes to your processes or your operations?
I do that depending on if the situation is unique. I mean, I'll turn anything into a training opportunity if the situation is unique enough. We had this email stream going back a few months ago where something about the back door not being locked properly. And, you know, it was one of these things that the emails just got hilarious. Like, this is the sixth email that I've sent about this. And I ended up using that as a training opportunity just to, you know, better communicate through these emails. So if it's a unique situation, then I love to use it as a training opportunity. If it's something that's fairly routine, I would not take every single one of them and make them into opportunities. I would just make sure that the process was followed the way that it's intended to be.
Yeah, I would agree with what Mary's saying. Yeah, not everything needs to be a training opportunity, but if it's something important enough, there's an point to be made, I think it makes sense to do so.
Okay, let's move on to talking about consumers. And I guess first, we'll, you know, in this era of the CFPB and the consumer complaint database, let's maybe start by defining what a complaint is. And Harry, I'll ask you, again, how do you sort of, you know, differentiate between inquiries and complaints?
Well, in my opinion, I think it's a little easier sometimes to differentiate on the consumer side. The average agency in a lot of the training consulting work that I do, you hear a lot of them lament about all of the complaints coming in. And of course, we're getting a lot of complaints from a variety of different sources. Probably the one that's in most people's mind would be relative to eOSCar. Yeah, so they've got a debt, it's being reported on their credit profile, and we get people complaining about that, and they're logging complaints via the portal. And sometimes they're doing it simply because it is a tactic to get it off. And you can pretty, in our assessment, you know, when you're analyzing accounts, you can pretty quickly determine people that are doing this as a tactic just to get it off and move on versus people that really have a question. We tend to do a lot of medical collections. So, you know what, it is confusing sometimes. You know, if I go to the doctor once a year and it takes me a few months to get a bill straightened out, that's one thing. But imagine what it's like when you go three times a week for the last year because you're very ill. Keeping all of those records is really very difficult. So you've got eOSCar, you've got written communication that comes in. So what we do is we handle each differently and separately. We'll handle a letter that comes in. It'll go through a process of review by a mitigation person in our company that will review the account and look into their assertions. We've also obviously got complaints that can be made verbally by the consumer on the phone to the collector. They can send in the complaint in writing. They can use a consumer attorney to represent them and be their spokesperson. We're getting complaints from the Better Business Bureau relative to our transactions with the consumer, and of course the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So they're coming at us from all different angles, and I think this is one of the things that is troublesome for a lot of agencies today. They've just got loads of complaints. The issue is not every communication is necessarily a complaint. So when somebody complains to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau about my company that says, I want something to be done about Remit Corporation, they have the audacity to call me at work. Well, we have the right to call them at work. And so you start sifting through these complaints and realize that many of them are, once again, it's about education. They don't really understand what an agency can and can't do. So I think there are distinctions there. And Mary, you might have some differentiation on how you handle these.
We have a communication department that handles all written communications. And so I'm going to speak more about the written. I mean, because if you get a verbal complaint, it's usually more of a like, oh, your person said this to me and I don't like that. You know, it becomes more about the behavior. And sure, we get very few of those. As a matter of fact, we had a client that called us maybe about a year ago and said, well, we got a complaint on you guys and I'm not even sure what to do because it's the first complaint we've ever gotten. So again, our system that we use really helps us to not get complaints. But what I would consider here is the same thing, Better Business Bureau and CFPBs. You know, eOSCar, we consider that more of a dispute. So, you know, that they're trying to resolve the debt by not paying it and getting it off their credit bureau as well as, you know, they can send us a written dispute because they have the right to do that. And we answer all disputes, whether they're sent to us within 30 days or 7 years, we're always going to respond to those disputes. So we have an internal department, much the same as you. They're going to do an investigation. I find the eOSCars to be the most troublesome just because the sheer volume that has increased over the last 3 years. So we're a pretty small company, but it takes at least one full-time person to answer eOSCars.
Yeah, we were the same. It wasn't quite one full-time person, but a tremendous amount of staff resource went into that process, particularly if you take it seriously and you really, you know, dive into each one.
And you get the people that dispute it repetitively.
Yep.
And so in a perfect world, what I had wanted to do was to flag those people and then send them over to our legal department. So that was an idea that I had a couple of years ago so that we would send them to our attorney as basically a natural consequence and try to get them to stop at the same time.
Sure. Sure. And you know, Mike, one of the things today that I think is important to come to terms with, I know we get a little battered with these complaints that come in and we get frustrated with them, but I have always believed, you know, thank God we get the complaints. I want to get complaints so that I can address it. And I'm going to sift through what's a valid complaint and what isn't. But the more complaints we get, if they at least vocalize their dissatisfaction, that gives us an opportunity to help them, understand, educate them, work it out. There might be a problem. You know, maybe they don't owe the debt. You know, we've all found situations where our clients forgot to report direct payments to us. So I think you need to take it seriously. More and more companies in the industry have actually on their websites, they have a link for a consumer to go to their complaint mitigation department and file a complaint. They welcome that. When you call an agency, sometimes in their menu on their phone system, one item is to lodge a complaint. So it's not like we want to you know, hide our heads and hope we never hear them. I think you want to hear them so that you have the opportunity to review them and perhaps figure out that you might have a problem somewhere. You know, maybe it is a client, as we've just talked about. Maybe it is a process. Maybe there was a glitch in the last data upload for Dr. Jones, and it doubled the balances. So I think we really need to spend a lot of time taking it seriously.
Yeah, I agree with all of that.
Well, let me ask you this then, Harry. Let me follow up. We talked a little bit before about soliciting feedback from clients. Do you do the same thing with consumers as well?
We have not proactively solicited that type of feedback in general. We solicit it by treating them well, helping them in a conversation on the phone with a collector. You know, part of a talk off or part of the wrap up when they're paying is there anything else I can do for you? Anything else we can help you in this situation? But it's not like we're sending out surveys or any of that type of thing in that regard.
And Mike, I'll add to that our process for handling communication from consumers, if it's going to be a complaint, is going to look very much like the client process. So we're going to use words that work. And neuroscience is actually going to back up that if somebody calls me, if a consumer calls me and they are making a complaint, you know, typically what they're complaining about, they probably have an ulterior motive of what they're really trying to get accomplished. So I see my job as doing that root cause analysis so I can find out what they really want. So we just sort of live in a culture right now where the squeaky wheel gets the attention, right? So what will happen is, I was doing a speech in St. Louis at an AHAM conference, and someone brought up something very interesting, like how someone will call and complain about a certain test. So this was at a medical facility. Person calls in, they're complaining about this test, but the call got escalated 7 times up to the executive level of administration before somebody finally figured out that the reason that the person was complaining about the test is because that particular test was not covered by insurance, and what they really wanted was a test that would be covered by their insurance plan. Now, if you're the consumer, that's a reasonable thing to expect, but for psychological purposes, we are passive aggressive about how we're going to go about getting our ultimate goal. So we'll come right out and ask them, what is the outcome that you're looking for? I mean, first we have to do, you know, the words that work, which means we have to validate whatever it is they just said to us. So, and I want to point out that validating isn't necessarily agreeing with them, but it is consciously acknowledging what they've said. Because here's the thing about consumers that I have noticed over the years, that when you don't validate what they've said, they will start their story over from the beginning. Have you noticed that, Harry?
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
So, the moment that you take the time to say, you know, I can completely understand why that would be a concern for you, you know, and then what you need to do is learn to redirect the question using powerful words that are going to plant certain seeds. So I think that as collectors, we say no so much, like, no, I'm sorry, you don't understand this correctly. Well, when you say that to somebody, then whatever you say after those words, no one's listening to you. They're just in their mind plotting how they're going to make their next argument, right? So what we
sure
need to do is validate by saying, you know what, I can completely understand why this is a concern to you. If I were in your shoes, it would be a concern of mine too. The great news is I'm here to help, and what I can do is that, 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 that. So, or, you know, I want to assure you that I'm here to help. May I ask you a question, please? Or can I ask you a question? And then say, what is the best outcome that you're looking for here in this situation? And then it's time to listen to what they say, because what they say probably has nothing to do with what they're complaining about.
I think you make a really good point there. I think you need to use some good communication strategies to find out what is the real nature of the concern. You know, it may not be, as you stated, that it was a bad test or it didn't go well. The real issue is payment. You know, if they didn't orchestrate it properly, it's all the money out of my pocket rather than my $100 copay. And the dilemma is it takes a skilled person to be able to orchestrate that kind of communication. And that that goes to what I often talk about in the training programs that I do, is that it's not easy to be a good collector today. It requires a lot of knowledge and skill and communication savvy to be effective at what you do in today's world.
Yes, absolutely. And I just want to say I'm getting a lot of questions coming in asking about the Words That Work system that I use. I have a workbook that I've created on that. I believe ACA has a webinar that anybody can access through their archives. Also, there's a magazine article written about it in the ACA Collector Magazine. But if anyone wants to email me at mary@maryshores.com, I have a workbook. I'd be happy to send you the link to download the workbook so that you can just see the steps for yourself. I mean, obviously, it's a complete training system, but you could at least get the basics if you want to download that workbook.
That sounds great.
Harry, let me ask you this. We've been talking about dealing with the complaints. What happens once a complaint or an inquiry has been resolved? What happens next? Does it just sort of get purged from everyone's memory, or get put in the garbage, or do you look to start to incorporate it into maybe adapting your operations or your training to make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, I think the whole issue that Mary talked about, the root cause analysis. I mean, is this just an anomaly? Is just an offhanded thing that happened? Is it related to another process that's skewed? So I think that what we would do for years, what we did was we had quarterly meetings with our staff. We would have a luncheon and we'd spend an entire afternoon. Shut down the company, and we actually did a lot of training and company updates, and we would utilize as information for that particular meeting all of the complaints that came in over the last 90 days. Now, if it is a high-level, really bad complaint about a process that's skewed that we didn't realize happened in the company, you were going to be on it immediately. But these general types of things, we're going to look and we're going to go back and we're going to do an assessment, because we keep a record of all of these complaints that come in, and then do some training with the group. And part of the training that we do, we use a platform very, very similar to your sponsor today. Let me just say that I think any of you out there today that are looking for a way to not only train your staff, but quantify that your staff gets it, utilizing programs like our sponsor, Chris Rickman today, and his Peak Performance company, and Knowledge Link, his product. I've seen it in operation, and a lot of companies are using it. I would urge you to seek some more information on it, because one of the problems we have is that no matter what the issue, whether it be a complaint that came in or a new process that we're training or a new rule or regulation, we can train, we can send them out to training. You know, I've done hundreds of programs for ACA over the years, but are they going to remember it next week? And so these types of platforms like Knowledge Link gives you the opportunity to not only train them and teach them through questioning, but then to quantify that and say, well, you got this one wrong. We're going to ask you again. We want to make sure that eventually you get it. And if you don't get it, or if 62% of my staff miss this question, that might tell me where I need to do some training in the organization.
Excellent. Well, we're just about running out of time. We've almost reached the top of the hour. So if anybody else has any questions about anything that we've discussed, or any other situations that you may have experienced, please enter them now. We're going to be wrapping up in the next couple of minutes. In the meantime, Mary, let me ask you about the process you have for taking these kind of situations and turning them into training opportunities.
Okay, so Words That Work is a system that I developed in 2005. That, again, it's really based on the fact that I want consumers to feel good about paying their debt, because having a debt is a psychological burden that will get in between them and their dreams. And as you mentioned, I'm a published author. This was actually how I ended up getting a a book deal. That book ended up being a personal development book, and now I'm going back writing a book. It's the working title is Everything Communicates, but it's very based on this communication system that I have created. So I've got a lot of people on the questions here asking me for copies of, I have a free workbook called Words That Work. I'm happy to give it to anyone. So Mike, if you want, I can send you a link to that and you can post the link or send it privately. Or if anyone emails me at mary@maryshores.com is the easiest way to email me. I'm happy to send you the workbook.
Okay.
So that's basically like there's some interesting rules on this. So like, for example, we have a do not say list, which is a list of words that we never say because I happen to know that these words trigger the nervous system and put consumers into their fight or flight system. And when a consumer is in their fight or flight, they're going to do nothing but be irrational and argumentative. So it's very important that we want to say things that are going to trigger their parasympathetic nervous system. But that's a whole nother webinar, Mike, so I'll leave it at that.
Thanks. Before we wrap up, Harry, any last words of advice for everybody listening in today?
Well, I just think that in the world that I've been operating in recent years and as a very active trainer for over 30 years, you are not alone. So those of you that maybe log in today and you lament some of the complaints that you get and the predatory law firms and the regulators and the lawsuits and all the craziness, it's a tough time in collections today. So I think what we need to do is a level head, implement programs and procedures that help you deal with and mitigate these issues because they're not going away, and tap into creative ideas like Mary outlines in some of the work that she's done in communication. It makes a difference. Learning how to better communicate, it makes a huge difference in how we run our organizations, both with our staff members and our business colleagues, our clients, and the consumers that we deal with every day.
Great. Well, we've reached the top of the hour and we're out of time. I want to thank Jana for the few minutes she was able to be on the webinar today, Mary and Harry for their insights and their time. This webinar definitely would not have been possible without their participation. I also want to give a big shout out of thanks to Christopher Richman and Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar and to all of you who signed up and participated today and engaged with questions and comments. I appreciate that. Thank you for participating. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Also, a recording of this event will be made available the next day or so. And a link will be uploaded to accountsrecovery.net where you'll be able to download and access the recording if you want a copy of it. Thank you very much, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Mike.